All right, so get this. I'm going to the dogs this time. Havanese dogs, to be exact.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and you know, when I saw you researching them, I thought, interesting choice.
Yeah.
But trust me, there's more to these dogs than just a cute, fluffy face.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because it's really fascinating how closely their history is actually tied to the Cuban Revolution.
Whoa. Okay, now you've really got my attention.
Yeah.
These articles you sent me talking about a dramatic escape, a whole breed almost vanishing, a whole lot of puppy love driving these rescues. You've got to give me the inside scoop here.
Well, it really is a story of resilience, I think. And it kind of goes beyond just the breed itself. You know, these dogs, their journey, it really kind of mirrors the human experience of, you know, exile and loss and the fight to kind of preserve your heritage and your history.
Okay, you've definitely got me hooked. Now lay it on me. What's the deal with these Havanese dogs? Clearly a lot more than meets the eye.
Well, for starters, they're old, like way older than you might think. Okay. They come from the Bichon family line. And get this, they were brought over to Cuba by Spanish colonists in the 1500s.
Get out of here, serious.
Yeah, the 1500s. So they've really seen it all.
Oh, wow, that's incredible. So they've practically witnessed the entire history of Cuba unfold.
Exactly. And over time, they even earned a nickname. They're called the Blanquito de la Habana.
What does that mean?
It means the Havana silk dog.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, it speaks to their elegant look, right? And how they were associated with this life of luxury.
I can see it.
They were the stars among the Cuban aristocracy. They were symbols of status, of luxury, you name it.
So that explains why they always seem to have that effortlessly glamorous thing going on. Like they just woke up like
that.
They were like canine royalty, kind of like a King Charles Spaniel, but with a Cuban twist.
Perfect comparison. They really were. But then, well, you know, the Cuban Revolution happened in 1959, and that changed everything for these pampered pups.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's the part that really has me on the edge of my seat. It's like one minute they're living the high life, the next revolution. It must have been so chaotic, so confusing for everyone, dogs included, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, suddenly owning a Havanese, a dog that represents the old elite, could be really risky.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
So not only were these families being uprooted, but then they had to make this heart-wrenching choice about their dogs, too. It's like, do we leave them behind or do we risk everything to bring them with us to, you know, this uncertain future?
I know. Can you imagine having to make that call? Your own safety or your dog?
Wow.
And some families, actually, I mean, they resorted to smuggling their dogs out of Cuba.
No way.
Yeah. Hiding them in suitcases or even on boats.
Oh, my gosh. See, that's real love right there.
It really is. It shows that bond, you know, between humans and their animals and how strong it can be.
For sure. So were there any Havanese left in Cuba after all that? I mean, after everyone fled, did any stay behind?
Unfortunately, that exodus, it almost completely wiped them out in Cuba.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, those families that did escape with their Havanese to the U.S., it's estimated that only around 11 Havanese made it out.
11 dogs. You're kidding. That's all that stood between the Havanese and extinction. Mm-hmm. Talk about pressure. Imagine being a breeder at that time. Yeah. You're basically walking a genetic tightrope.
Talk about a comeback story, right?
No!
And that's just the start. 11 dogs, that's all they had.
That's wild.
To rebuild an entire breed here in America.
So they were like the Adam and Eve of Havanese in America.
Exactly. And, you know, it's really thanks to some seriously dedicated people that the breed didn't just survive, but it actually flourished.
Okay, you got to give me some names. Who are these Havanese heroes?
All right, well, one name really stands out. Dorothy Goodale.
Okay.
Now, this woman was a true Havanese hero.
What did she do?
So picture this, right? She hears about these dogs, these 11 Havanese, scattered around the country with families who fled Cuba, and she makes it her mission to find them, track them down, piece together their bloodlines. I mean, talk about dedication.
Wow, it's like those incredible stories about people, you know, saving endangered species from the brink.
That's exactly what it was like. I mean, this woman was putting ads in Spanish language newspapers.
Wow.
She was traveling all over just to find these dogs, talk to their owners, and basically ensure that the breed had a future here.
That's really incredible when you think about it, the amount of effort that takes. I mean, this was a breed that most people had probably never even heard of back then.
I know.
It's really inspiring.
It really is. And, you know, she didn't just want to, like, collect the dogs. She wanted to rebuild the Havanese breed the right way.
Oh, I bet.
And that's tricky because you think about it, she had to like carefully expand that tiny gene pool from those 11 dogs.
Right.
But also stay true to what makes a Havanese, you know, the breed standard.
It's like a balancing act. You want to make sure they survive, but you don't want to lose those unique characteristics that make them special in the first place.
Exactly. And the amazing thing is she pulled it off. By the late 1980s, the Havanese was well on its way to recovery here in the U.S.
That's incredible. From just 11 dogs.
Yep. And get this, they even got officially recognized by the American Kennel Club in 1996.
Oh, wow. So they really hit the big time.
They did.
Talk about a comeback story. But I'm wondering, did they stay true to those original Havanese? I mean, with such a small gene pool, wouldn't some people say today's Havanese aren't really authentic?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. Because of that genetic bottleneck, some people do question the authenticity of the modern Havanese.
I can see why.
Right. And, you know, they argue that today's Havanese might not be an exact replica of those dogs that, you know, were around in pre-revolution Cuba.
It's like making a copy of a copy.
But
at some point, don't you lose some of the original?
Exactly.
Hmm.
But it's important to remember these breeders, they weren't trying to create like a picture-perfect copy of the original Havanese.
Right.
They were trying to save the breed from disappearing completely.
That's true. So in a way, it's even more incredible. They might not be identical, but we wouldn't even have Havanese today without them.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, though.
What about those dogs that stayed behind in Cuba? Did any of their relatives end up making it out okay, or what happened to the Havanese back there?
It's tough to say for sure. It's kind of like a big question mark, you know?
Yeah.
But sadly, the Havanese in Cuba, they really faced a different story because they were so closely tied to, you know, the old regime. They basically vanished from the island.
Wow, they really disappeared completely.
It took decades and help from breeders in other countries to even try to bring the Havanese back to Cuba.
Wow, so those Havanese that made it out with their families?
Yeah.
They're kind of like a living piece of that old Cuba.
Totally.
A piece of history that almost disappeared completely, but got a second chance in a new place.
Exactly. And that's what's so powerful about this whole story. It's like, yeah, we're talking about dogs, but it's really about so much more.
It's bigger than just dogs.
But way bigger. It's about people holding on to their history, you know, their culture, and that special bond between humans and animals that can even survive something as huge as a revolution.
It's true. It makes you think, what would those dogs say if they could talk about escaping Cuba, coming to America, and basically becoming the Havanese we know and love today?
I know, right? Now, that would be a story.
That's for sure. All right, so to wrap up our Havanese deep dive today, we learned these dogs are way more than just cute and cuddly. They're survivors, they're a symbol of Cuban culture, and they prove that sometimes a little puppy love and a whole lot of dedication is all it takes to bring something back from the brink.
Couldn't have said it better myself. A true testament to resilience, both for the dogs themselves and for the amazing people who loved them enough to make sure their story continued.
Absolutely. So as we sign off today, I'll leave you with this. If those Havanese could talk, what stories do you think they'd tell about their journey to becoming the beloved breed we know today? Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey through history.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
The Havanese HQ podcast is a production of Havanese World and available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and Pandora. Gary Fujioka Sr. is the managing editor and executive producer.